If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying this show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. My guest today is Stephen Myers Dominguez, better known as Toasty Cakes. I've had him on before, and we are going to catch up on his progress. Please enjoy the conversation. Toasty Cakes, welcome back to the American Glutton Podcast.
What's happening, bud? How you been?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I mean, it's been a little bit since we talked last time. And my favorite thing is when we talk, I know that it's always going to be a surprise. And I know that we're always going to try to find something new. Like, usually you have like these, you know, these experts on, these gurus, these doctors. And like, I'm just a silly little guy. So excited to see what we get into.
You're not a silly little guy to me. I've known you for a long time, and we've had conversations many times, and now we're just having a conversation that other people are listening in on.
You know, just two guys, hopefully doing a little help for other people, which I love.
Yeah. The last time we talked, you were beginning a process.
That's true. That's correct.
Where has that gone? What's the evolution of that?
Yeah, man. So, to catch anyone up who missed it, we talked about 6 months ago, and I posted something on Instagram about Ozempic, and you replied to it. And kind of the question was, is that my path? Is that my future? Is that what I'm going to get into? And I said, I don't think so. I think I'm going to try something different. And so here we are. You know, like, I used my own motivation. I kind of used my own style that I wanted to find, you know, this thing in. And 6 months later, you know, a lot's happened.
What has happened? Let's get into that. What's the nitty gritty? What have you done? What are you doing? And I also want to know if your feelings about Ozempic have changed.
You know, my feelings then are my feelings now. And it's an excellent solution for a lot of people. I think it's helping a lot of people. And I have a lot of friends. It's helping and it's great for them. I just knew it wasn't for me because for me, the problem was in the foundation, you know, like I built my house on some bricks and it was just going to be burying those if I used a solution to get me there, because it wasn't going to address what's got me to this place before, what got me into this life. And I wanted to deal with that rather than just kind of like paper over it with, you know, a Kickstarter.
Yeah. Well, okay. But let me ask one question about what you said. It's helping a lot of people I know. Are the people you know 24-year-old models who are trying to lose 2 pounds? Are those the type of people you know, or people? It's helping
everybody. You know, I have a friend who jokes that like they should just be putting it in the water soon. If somebody wants to win that election in 2024, they need to run on that Ozempic for All campaign, because that's your ticket. I know it's LA and I know that this is a bubble that I live in, but it's rare that I go to a party or I'm in like a social situation where there aren't people who are talking about it, who are on it. And that could be 24-year-old models who are just like scraping those last couple of pounds off to stay competitive in their game. That's morbidly obese people who are trying to get their life back, are trying to get some more longevity in their life. Everyone in between, you know, and some of those people, I think that it's a healthy solution. And some of those people, you know, I'm not here to judge what they're doing right, or why they're doing
sure,
it.
Sure. No, and I don't want you to call. I'm not asking you to call anybody. I just want to know, like, I know you're a photographer. You're around you're in the fashion industry a lot.
Right.
And like, my perception is like, if it's in that industry, it's completely like, that's not the purpose it was created for.
No, it wasn't created for that. And sometimes I do get a little sad when I talk to people and they're telling me they're on it and I should be on it. And, you know, the funny joke is I picked the funniest time to change my life, because I hit it right when everyone else was using the hack. And so it's like, you know, I just decided to go the long way around it. But an interesting thing about me and what I'm doing is I've had some substantial changes, and I guess we'll get into that in a minute. You know, like I don't even own a scale. I don't know how much weight I've lost, but we have a mutual friend and I'll text you guys together. And I guess there have been visual changes to me. And
huge, I think, massive visual changes.
Well, thank you. You know, and I'm still terrified to even acknowledge that I've lost a pound, which is part of, you know, part of our psychosis, maybe yours and mine. But it's so funny because so many people are afraid to even acknowledge it to me. And I don't know if they're being polite. I don't know if they just don't know how to approach it. But like, I do know that I've talked to some people, and then I've talked to some people who talk to some people who are like, oh no, they just think, you know, they just think you're on it. Like, I think people assume that I'm on Ozempic. And so they're just afraid to even acknowledge that I'm over here doing the work, because they don't want to call it out. And it's fine. Like, the biggest thing for me is I know that I'm doing it the way that I wanted to do it. And that's, I don't care if everyone else thinks it. I don't care what anyone else thinks about me and my path. I'm happy, and I'm happy with how I'm doing it.
Okay. I hear you. I want to just say, because I will play the devil's advocate to just to defend people. I think because I've experienced that, where I'm working really hard, I'm around people and nobody's saying anything. And it's almost like motherfuckers didn't say anything, but then I'd hear that they were all worried about me. And now when I'm doing something that's very evident and nobody's acknowledging it, it also feels weird. I've actually had to sit down with some of my friends and have this conversation. And for the most part, they would say like, well, we didn't know how fragile it was, and we didn't want to throw off your game, you know, which is fair. Like, there were lots of times, multiple times, where my friends would hold an intervention for me and I would be shocked, because I thought nobody knew I was doing drugs. Turns out everybody knew I was doing drugs. And I'd go, okay, I'm going to get sober. And like a week in, you know, three of them would be like, we're really proud of you. We're so happy. We were so worried, and now you're doing great. And that'd be the night that I go and use drugs. And then they'd be like, why the fuck did we say anything? You know?
Yeah, which is, you know, hilarious. And I mean, I just said it myself, like, I'm terrified to acknowledge that I'm making a change. So I know that there are people that love me in this world, and that's a lot to accept. I mean, I don't know if you ever had issues with that, but that's a lot for me to accept. And accepting that this life is mine, but also it's something that I'm here for other people, is a lot to accept. And so I definitely have had that conversation with people who know that, you know, they know that I'm on a path. They know how I'm doing, what I'm doing, but they're like, yo, like, you're doing it and we don't want to acknowledge it because whatever it is, it's working. So like, it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to jinx it or whatever. And yeah. I feel that way myself. So I do not blame anyone else for feeling that way. And like I said, you know, I'm also been such a dick about it in the past. Like I don't like being an activity book for people. I don't like, I have my life and I know we all have things to fix in our life, but like, you know, I've been a little bit less than generous with people who have come into my life to offer support or to offer help or to try to quote unquote fix me. And so, I think maybe they just see like, oh, he's doing it and it's working. So like, let's stay hands off right now and just hope for the best.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I, you know, look, when I see you, I'm nothing but you're going to be like, you're fucking killing it, because that's my perception. And I know that that can be helpful too, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, and every once in a while, you know, you don't need to say anything. Like, the change is evident. And so I just see how people look at me. Like, you know, there's that thing, which I'm sure you've got before, which is sometimes people be like, oh, hey, did you lose a little bit of weight? Oh, it looks like you lost a little bit of weight. And that's one reaction. But then when you actually hit it, people like see you and they're like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. People come at you with that, like, yo, you're different. And it's a completely different vibe. And a lot of times people will say that with their eyes, and it is what it is. But again, like, it's, you know, I never wanted to do this so that I could wear a, you know, a more fashionable pair of pants. I never wanted to do it so I could look a better way. Like, I wanted to do it to get my life back. I wanted to do it to get a life that I quite frankly never had or haven't had for a really long time. And so, you know, it doesn't matter who acknowledges it along the way. I'm really happy with where I'm going, and I'm like very optimistic about where I'm going right now.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Good question. I mean, again, it's so hands off. Like I said, I don't even own a scale. Like, my scale so far, like, I've sent, you know, I have you and our mutual friend on a text, and like, my scale is, I've got a stack of pants, like about 45 pairs of pants at this point. It's like 3 feet high and rising. And that's how I know, that's how I judge my progress. And so I just, every time I get a new pair of pants, I know I'm still on the path. I kind of don't like to think about it too much. And part of it is not thinking about it too much, because I'm an overthinker. You know, it's part of how we are, what we are, any sort of ADHD addiction stuff. One of those interesting things about, like, it doesn't matter if it's drugs, drinking, if it's this, you know, if you stop, like, the day that you stop, you have a lot of free time on your hands. And for some people like us, a lot of free time to overthink stuff isn't super healthy and super helpful. So I'm trying to like let this all be subconscious. And that's not the answer to your question, I guess. But the answer to your question is, when it started, I started doing crazy restricting. And again, every time I tell somebody, they had an opinion and they wanted to offer their advice or their, you know, expertise from the TikToks that they saw about health, or, you know, the Instagram reels about what I should be doing and shouldn't be doing. I was doing probably unhealthy restricting. I was probably eating like 400 calories a day for quite a while, but you can't argue with results. And it was working, and it was incredibly sustainable for me, because what I did was I took the decisions about eating, about diet, out of my hands. I was eating, like, I was going through those big clamshells of, like, you know, spring greens every day. You know, those, I used to joke that you'd get those big, like, those gigantic boxes of like spinach and greens, and just get one, throw it in the fridge until it's like slime, and then throw it out and go get the new one from the store. And I was flipping through those like crazy, and I was flipping through soup like crazy. And I was just kind of keeping tabs and saying, oh, I'm eating 400, 500 calories a day. And that was sustainable for a long time, and it worked. And it's a little bit white knuckling, but it got the ball rolling. And then I slowly started to like loosen up a little bit and integrate more things. And so I'm not on any specific diet. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm more or less keeping track of the calories I eat. And so maybe I'll eat a salmon today, and maybe I'll eat like a pound of Brussels sprouts today. But I always just keep track of that and keep track of like the things that I know that I can eat in a healthy way, or things that kind of like work around my style of overeating. You know, like it's like, you know, I'm sure you know this very well. If you have a pizza, you can slam a whole pizza. That'll fuck you up. And we all can. I think anybody can. So I don't want to keep that around. But if I have a 1 pound bag of Brussels sprouts, I can eat 10 1 pound bags of Brussels sprouts and I'm going to be good. And so keeping healthy things in the house, basically cooking for myself every day and just trying to keep like a loose count on where I'm going has been my style so far.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's so smart. Like Brussels sprouts, I don't love vegetables, but Brussels sprouts is up there with one of my, like, I can't say I love I love Brussels sprouts, but I like them a lot more than I like most other vegetables. And you get a bag of Brussels sprouts, it would be very hard to actually overeat those. You know what I mean? If you're making Brussels sprout fondue or, you know, creamed Brussels sprouts, I could probably overeat the shit out of that. But Brussels sprouts, even cooked in a pan or steamed.
Air fry them, man. And it's great. Like I literally take the 1 pound bag, dump it in, spritz it with some like olive oil, salt and pepper. And it's fantastic. It's like
a little crispy on the outside. Yeah.
Crispy on the outside. Great. Exactly. And then, so like I'll do that with protein. And so that way I can work in less protein, but it's great. And also just like trying to find other things to fill up that time, because, you know, for me, food has always been kind of about boredom, kind of like it's this activity to do when I'm stressed, when I'm bored, when I'm whatever. And so one of the things I said when I started this was also, I'm not going to use food to reward myself, but I'm also not going to use it to punish myself. And so like, if I go out and kill it on a photo shoot, if I go out and I have some great achievement, my first thought is not going to be, oh damn, I'm going to go have like a cheat day, because that's not how I want to celebrate. And on the same token, if I go out and have a terrible day or something is going wrong, I don't want to kind of resort to it. And so that's one of those things. It's like a thinking fast and slow thing, where part of it is I have to create kind of a system that I'm going to rely on when I do this. And then the other part of it is when things, you know, when there are speed bumps, when there are like curves in the road that I didn't expect, how do I improvise? And, you know, that's been my system so far.
That's awesome. Are there things, is pizza like an off limits thing to you right now? And I'm not, and you know, I'm not a forever guy, but like, is that one of the things where you're like, look, I'm staying away from pizza for the time being, or that type of food?
I mean, it's interesting because I used to kind of rely on just these things like, oh, this is a given that I'll have this every once in a while, or have like a burger every once in a while. It's not off limits. I just haven't had an excuse to eat it lately. And that's part of it, like part of trying to like reprogram my brain around it, like create new paths and new habits. So like, if there is an opportunity to go eat pizza, if I go to New York, I'm gonna eat some pizza, you know. But like, if I go to a party and there's pizza on the table, like that's just not for me. That never was for me, but I'm just extra conscious of it. And it's been interesting, like trying to find new motivations, try to find new paths, and like seeing where like my habits are going to form around what I really want and if I crave something. So that kind of goes back to that, like not punishing myself nor rewarding myself with food. It's like, if I want some barbecue, I'm going to go get some barbecue because I want this to be a lifestyle. I want this to be sustainable. I don't want this to be some like, I did this for 6 months and then I'm out thing. So if I'm ready to have pizza, I'll eat it, but I just haven't had the opportunity or had the like craving.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had that experience where I go to a party, there's pizza on the table, and all it does is make me want to go get good pizza.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of like, which is kind of like a drug thing sometimes. It's like, oh, everyone here is having their fun. I'm going to go back to my place and I'm going to do my drugs by myself in my way. And yeah, I kind of treat food that way sometimes too. And so, you know, I don't really eat in front of people. I never have in my entire life. And part of like the process is to learn to be more social around it, because it can be kind of like a toxic thing to eat socially. But if you're hiding it and if you're not doing it in a way that is healthy because you're sharing with everyone else, you have to ask yourself why you're not doing that either. If it's something that you have to go back home and do, it's like drinking alone. You know, there's a Simpsons joke there, or it's like doing drugs alone. It's like everyone else is doing drugs to have fun. And then you go back to your place and you're going back to do it in a different way. And
yeah.
If eating is like doing a line of coke, then I think it's time to stop and think about it.
Yeah. No, I did. I was a very much a solo guy too. When did shame about eating in front of people? Do you have any idea when that started for you?
It never didn't start. You know, as long as I can remember, that was a thing. And there's so many different reasons for it. And one of the big reasons that I kind of like ignore and never talk about is I was raised super poor. Like I was raised incredibly poor, and there were the like, you know, eat today because you don't know if it's going to be there tomorrow thing. And that's a big problem. But there's also, you know, if I never went out with friends and like took some allowance so that I could chip in, that wasn't there. It went through to college where like, you know, I went to college and everyone went out to some restaurant. I'm like, oh, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to chill because I'm not trying to spend $80 on a meal because I don't have it. And so that was a component of it. But also there's, you know, I always had that feeling, because when you're big, like, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. You think they're thinking a certain way. And like, I would be sitting in a class in college and like some, you know, skinny frat dude would walk in with a pizza and just be eating pizza in the middle of class. And it's like, dude, if I like ate a grape right now, everyone in this fucking room is going to stare at me and be like, oh, big surprise, fat kid stuff in his face, you know? And so I just kind of never wanted to give people the opportunity to see me in that way. Like I didn't want to appear to meet that cliche, but yeah, there was a component of it that was just how I was raised. And, you know, obviously so much of all of our bad habits go back to childhood and go back to like that stuff. So we're way too old to fucking blame our childhood though. So I'm kind of over that.
Yeah, no, I'm not even asking you to. It's just interesting to me because I have that too. You know, one of my guardrails is like, if I wouldn't, you know, look, I can't say every time I eat, I'm with my wife and kids, because I'm not. It just wouldn't be true. And sometimes at work, I'm sitting in a trailer alone with my food and like, what am I going to call my wife and kids? Please come to my work so I can eat some food. But the point is like, if I wouldn't eat it in front of them, I know the behavior is off for me. I'm not saying you have to apply that to you, but because I share that with you, for the longest time, I wanted to eat and have my involvement with food alone. Going out to dinner with people, I would order something that I thought of as healthy so that I wouldn't be ridiculed. I would try to not finish it so that I wouldn't be ridiculed. And then I would be planning what I was going to eat as soon as I was away from these people.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. 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 No, totally. And yeah, part of it is that is like, you know, I still like am like a little kid in some ways of like, I don't know what a portion looks like. So, you know, I'm with you on that. And like, I've had so many friends over the years who are like, just come on, like, let's eat together, which is, I feel like I'm being policed and that doesn't vibe with me. And I'm sure you hate it too. So it's like, fuck you guys. I'm going to go and, you know, hurt myself with food today or whatever. But yeah, definitely one of the things I keep in mind is like, if I was with people right now, if I was with the people in my life that I love, would I feel comfortable eating this in front of them? If not, then let me stop and think about this for a minute. Let me stop and think about why I'm doing this. But yeah, man, that thing where you're sitting at the restaurant and like you're drinking a glass of water and you're like, yeah, man, I'm, you know, planning for later. I'm planning to see what I'm going to do later. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. And even with drugs and stuff like that, you know, I'd be around people doing drugs. And my idea was like, I can't do drugs with them the way I want to because it might be upsetting to them, you know?
Yeah. But it's but like, can, you're, yeah, yeah. It's, you're having fun and I have a problem. And like,
yeah.
I have experience with all of it, man. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, like Ozempic, whether it's being misused in Hollywood or not, you know, I think about other drugs and this isn't the first time I've said it, but it's like a perfect analogy for me. Like cocaine is a really worthwhile numbing agent. It like,
of course,
you know, was designed to pack the nasal cavity for doing sinus surgery. Works very well.
So fun, man.
And then it's also used as something else. Like, you know, you put it in
appetite suppressant, gets you going. It's yeah.
So like all of this stuff can be misused. And I would totally understand, like, you know, if you grew up in Miami in the 80s and then you went to have your nose fixed and they were like, we're going to pack your nose with cocaine to make it numb. And then we're going to drill around in there. You'd be like, wait, no, I don't want to be a part of that. They were cutting people's heads off in motel bathrooms.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things about food versus drugs is, you know, if you want to sit down and say, I'm never going to do coke again, that's sustainable. If you're never going to smoke weed again or drink, that's one thing. But like, you know, one of the things about this problem is you can't decide that you're never going to eat again, no matter how much you want to, no matter how much you try. So it's trying to like work around that thing and make healthy habits as opposed to like pure abstinence, which, you know, doesn't work.
Well, it's impossible. The outcome is death. Is yeah. Pretty, you know, how long can a person go without eating, you know? Right. I bet you and I could go longer than Twiggy, but in the scheme, it's not that long. We don't get that long. I like what you're doing, man. There's a guy named Adam Bornstein. I've had him on the podcast. He's a wonderful guy. And his whole, the way he comes at it is just like, I want to do the smallest amount possible to make some change. And I'm not saying you're doing the smallest, you're actually doing something big and hard. But like, as far as the sustainability thing goes, like, you know, the idea, there was a point for me where it was like, okay, if I don't eat carbohydrates again, that's fine, as long as I get to where I want to go. But my metric back then was a number. I wanted to see a number on a scale. And yeah. All of the goals I set with those numbers, first of all, not eating carbohydrates didn't get me anywhere near the number I had set. I would lose weight and then I would stop losing weight and then I would be frustrated and think I was wrong and broken and bang my head against the wall. And then I'd give up and go like, well, if I'm not going to lose weight, I might as well eat carbs. Then I'd gain the weight back. But even with the number on the scale, like sitting there going like, I just need to be 200 pounds lighter and then I'll be fine. Or I just need to wear a size 32 jeans and then I'll be fine. Or any of these things, you know, you could kill yourself to get there. And then once you've got there, what do you do with it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no destination in this. That's where like my thinking about it has been a lifestyle change because, you know, you and I are very stubborn people. Like we have incredible willpower. And so I can white knuckle it. You know, back when I was doing the Penn Jillette thing, I went 23 days without eating. Like that wasn't a problem for me. I mean, I was dizzy, but like I could do it. But if you're not eating carbohydrates until you get to a number, then what? Like what happens at that number? Well, you have to wake up tomorrow and live the rest of your life. You know, it's kind of like any sort of goals or expectations that we have. You know, when I started taking pictures, I had goals. You know, when you started acting, you had goals. Like I said, maybe one day I'm going to be on the cover of Vogue magazine. Maybe one day I'm going to, you know, do this or do that. And then I started meeting people who had achieved those goals. And I started achieving a lot of the goals myself. You know, I had billboards up around America, had covers of magazines, had, you know, big ads in big magazines and Vogue and Vanity Fair and stuff. And it was insane. But, you know, some people don't fully understand that like it's difficult to get me excited. And it's because I know that when you wake up the next morning, you still got to put on your pants and go to work. You know, like go and shoot the cover of Vanity Fair. Go win a Golden Globe. You know, go do a movie with the biggest movie star in the world. And then wake up tomorrow and do it all over again. And, you know, that's why I've been, that's why I don't have a scale. That's why I don't have a number in my head, because I'm not trying to get somewhere. I'm trying to stick around for a little longer. I'm trying to have an easier life. And, you know, like for guys like you and me, our weight, our body, it's always going to be a conversation. And when people talk to me and people ask me like, do you have a goal in mind or do you have this in mind? I have to explain to them like, no, because this is a lifestyle. Like this is not summer vacation. This is not going to college even. This isn't something I do for 6 months or 4 years. This is something that I'm going to have to be conscious of the rest of my life. And you are going to be conscious of the rest of your life. But by thinking about it a little bit, we get to have our lives. We get to have our lives back, but we get to have a life that we never could have envisioned. And, you know, I'm very optimistic about that, which is a crazy thing for me to say because I've never been optimistic about this stuff before in my life. But my body is like the least interesting thing about me. It's this thing that I think about all the time. Your body is this thing you think about all the time, but I'm a fucking cool dude. Like I've got a lot of interesting things to say and I just want to take, you know, that element out of the mix. I want to be able to say, you know what? I'm going to go visit my friend in France. I'm going to go for a hike up Runyon. I'm going to just jump on a plane and go do a walk in Central Park with Ethan because that sounds like fun. And my goal isn't, like I said, to like fit in some cool shirt. It's to not have to think about this thing in every decision I make in life. And that's kind of what's kept me going.
Yeah. And are you prepared for the potential or the possibility that it's still a factor no matter what you do? You know what I mean?
You know, I mean, I am. And, you know, that's a great segue. So like we always have these conversations at an interesting crossroads. And I just last week went to see a doctor. So I have a bunch of friends who are, you know, they love me deeply and they're invested in my life and what's going on, which is amazing. It's so incredible to have a support network. And one of my friends was convincing me to go see a therapist because, you know, why not? It's LA. And I think we all need some help. So walked in and before she said anything, before the therapist like was, you know, tinkering with my noodle, she was like, what the fuck is wrong with your leg, dude? I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, you just limped in. I'm like, oh yeah, that's this thing I do. So the therapist, this is LA. She's like, here's the best doc in the country. Go talk to him. I go in last week and walked into an orthopedist for the first time in my life, knowing that like, so my weight, we've talked about this before. And back when we were in the gym together with Eric, this was a big issue. Yeah. I've had a fucked up leg for about a decade and it's obviously been a problem. It's obviously, you know, slowed my progress. It's everything I do, everywhere I go, it's an issue. So,
well, I remember it limited your mobility. It was like you were fine, but for your knee.
Exactly. And, you know, that becomes a big issue when you want to be healthy, you want to exercise, you want to focus on fitness, you want to be able to hike Runyon or just go and, you know, hit the recumbent bike. And that's a problem. But, you know, same thing. If I want to go and walk through Kyoto with a friend, or if I want to go and walk through Central Park with you, it's a factor. And if I want to go and do a lot of work, if I want to go and do jobs, it's, again, it's kind of like the weight. It was always on the table. So I've been through so many hoops and I saw like a specialist in 2017 who's like supposedly the best knee guy in, you know, at Cedars, and he didn't say anything. And I've been to a biomechanic, which is like an expensive way of saying a physical therapist, and I've been to a physical therapist, and I've been to all these people, and you know, they have me doing exercises and everyone's trying something else. And so finally I go see this orthopedist last week and run a couple x-rays. The guy comes in and he looks at me for literally 10 seconds and he's like, well, you need a new hip, dude. I'm like,
whoa.
I was like, what the fuck, man? I like, it knocked me over. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, man. Like your left hip is obliterated. You have catastrophic end stage arthritis, you have the hip of a 75-year-old man, and basically you're fucked, man. Like, you know, he didn't say it that way, but he said it that way. And he was like, I wish there was a shot I could give you. I wish there was a pill I could give you. I wish there was something we could do. He's like, this ship sailed. And I'm like, wow. Because I was not ready for that. A bunch of people told me to go see the doctor, and I'm not great with self-care, which you can, you know, probably understand. And so I walked in and I was like, I knew it was going to be something. I knew it was going to be big, but like, I just was not ready for that. And, you know, this guy is one of the foremost experts. And he started to explain to me like what was going on and what that looked like. And I was like, wow, this is horrible. But at the same time, like a little bit validating, like a little bit vindicating.
The explanation feels good, right? Like, okay, and yeah, that like, explains I'm
like,
stuff.
It's like a fucking tidal wave hit me because I was like, you know what? Like, I've had so many people over the years tell me, dude, just go get some Hokas, or just, you know, go walk around the neighborhood, go hike up Runyon, go do this, talk to my guy, talk to my biomechanic, talk to my, you know, go hit the gym, just get on the bike.
And by the way, I love that there's such a thing in Los Angeles as a biomechanic. That is fucking hilarious, dude.
Well, you know who set me up with that guy?
Who? Mike?
Our mutual friend. Yep. And so, of course, no, but he's amazing. And the dude's amazing. But what that dude doesn't have is an MRI or an X-ray to see in. And, you know, this guy told me, he's like, your hip, it's supposed to be a golf ball and it's a flat surface. He's like, your hip is so far gone that your left leg is 8 millimeters shorter than your right leg because you've ground it to dust. So basically that's why I'm like, I've been teeter tottering for years and years. And he's telling me this, but like, again, I'm not Mr. You know, told you so, but it makes me feel a little bit validated at all of the people who have been in these like Monday morning quarterbacks of how I could just fix myself. And like, makes me feel a little validated that I did try a lot of stuff and it wasn't working. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter if I'm 400 pounds or 100 pounds. Like if you're a Mack truck or if you're a Suzuki Samurai, if you have a flat tire, you ain't driving. And right. So like, that was a big revelation for me. And so at the same time, like there's just a million thoughts going through my head, and I was interested, and I've never had surgery, and I was kind of scared. And, you know, I was like on a fact finding mission with this guy. And I was like, okay, man, like, so tell me, like, what does it look like on the other side of this? And he was like, well, let me tell you, he's like, every day after you get this, you'll wish you got it 10 years earlier. You're going to sing, you're going to dance, you're going to run, you're going to have your life back. And, you know, like, I'm going to modify that and say, I'm going to have a life that I never had. Because
do you just need one?
Just one. Both? Yeah, it's my left. No, it's just my left. And I was, you know, there's, you know, the Charlie Brown with Lucy, like kind of meme where she goes and pulls the football out of the last second. He's telling me this and I'm kind of getting optimistic. And then he's got this look on his face. And he's like, well, and I was like, what? And this guy's got amazing bedside manner and he's obviously an expert. And he kind of gets like a little fidgety. He's like, well, you know, well, and I'm like, doc, I'm a big boy. Just fucking talk to me like an adult man. He's like, well, you know, there's a weight limit on these things. I was like, yes. And he's like, and you're probably there. And so like, we're going to talk with this other doctor because he's an expert in it. And essentially, you know, there are obviously complications when you're big, but there's only so much weight you can put on this prosthetic. And, you know, there's only so much weight you can do once you, you know, modify your body. And so I was, you know, I explained to him, I was like, well, you know, I've lost 150 pounds in the past 6 months. He's like, that's amazing. Just keep going because we're going to get you in here. We're going to get you taken care of. But like, this is a new lifestyle for you. And I'm at the same time very excited and I'm trying to like be hopeful about it. And I'm starting to think about all these things that I've been robbed of for so long. You know, for 10 years, I haven't been able to do so many things. I haven't had a normal life. And, you know, it's like, I'm not trying to go skydiving. I'm not trying to hike Mount Everest. I want to like get out of bed and not be in pain. I want to get up off of the couch and not look like I'm going to fall over or feel like I'm going to fall over, you know? And like, it's those little things that people take for granted that all of a sudden I've kind of like already taken off the plate. Like I took those out of my mind and I didn't know I was ever going to have those back. And I'm really excited and hopeful, but this is kind of like where I want to bring it back to the health and the, you know, your space is, it's fucking terrifying, man. Like you know this and I know this. Like our weight, which is like drugs, like anything else, it's like a gun on the table. You can always reach for it. And you've yo-yoed, I've yo-yoed. We've all got a path. But like if I do this thing, there's a ceiling there. And it's not like it's gone, because yeah, I could fuck it up. Like I could blow through it and I could really ruin my life in a big way if I want to. But if I want to get this, if I want to be sustainable, if I want to be able to like have this surgery and not ruin it, I'm basically closing a door on being a certain size.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, like if I told that to anyone, all of my skinny friends, all my normal friends, they're stoked. They're like, oh my God, this is amazing. You'll never go back. And I'm like,
hold on.
Wait a second, because I am an expert at fucking up my life. Like I am an expert at ruining my life. You know, I don't need any help tripping over my shoelaces. They are right there. They're ready for me to fall on my face. And so it's crazy. It's crazy to think that I could do this thing that could change my life forever, give me a life that I haven't had for a long time. But with it comes a responsibility that I've never had. And with it comes the idea that like, I'm not going to go back. And at the same time, you know, it's going to give me new options. If I lost this much weight, not doing cardio, not being able to do normal exercise, and then I get it and all of a sudden I can, of course, in theory, I'm going to be able to do more. Of course, in theory, I'm going to keep going down. But, you know, as you and I know, life throws you a curveball sometimes.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, I mean, like my heart rate is up just imagining the stress of that position, because it is a two-sided knife there, right? Like,
exactly.
Because I've been in that situation where you're like, no, I'm going to take on the burden of this responsibility, and that will be the motivating factor. And I can throw that away. I can fuck that up. And I have a number of times where you're like, wait, even given the circumstances, I blew it. So that's very real. But I also think, like, you know, you don't the absolute wrong thing to do, I think, is to just go like, well, the potential to fuck it up is there, so I'm not even going to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, that's just defeat and apathy and like. Don't do that.
If I fuck it up, it's gonna be magnificently. Like, right, if I fuck it up, I'm going out like stars and stripes. So
yeah, fucking, you know, go big
or go home. And yeah, I'm gonna do it. And so like, I'm, you know, I haven't told anyone. Like, this all happened last week. This is all very fresh to me, but like, I'm here telling you because I need accountability from everybody. I need to be accountable mostly to myself, but like, of all the things I am, I'm not afraid of a fucking challenge. Like, you know, if you ask me to climb Mount Everest, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it.
Well, here's all I say. Like, I agree and think the most sustainable long-term approach to weight loss is lifestyle change, is dealing with the compulsions and habits we've built up around food and trying to figure that out versus like just do a diet, which is intentionally short term, right? However, I don't see anything wrong with going like, I'm making these changes. I'm aware of what the rest of my life has to look like. But in the short term, I want to get this surgery and I have to lose weight. So like, what's the number you have to lose and what's the route that gets you there? Because scheduling stuff like this isn't like, I made it. Can I pop in next week? You know?
Well, and yeah. So, you know, like I did it a really like tertiary, just look at the internet because I don't like to look it up and I'm not trying to be a Google MD. I'm going to wait and talk to the other doctor to make sure, you know, see what his number is. And it's kind of like a ladder, you know, like a ladder says it's weight limited for 200, but really you can, you know, that's for the lawyers. That's not for us.
I know that's not true. I know a guy who got a double hip replacement and he weighs more than 200 pounds.
Right. Yeah. Well, like, so the number for this is like a 220 to 275 maybe. And then there's other complications when you're big, you know. Does it get infected when you go under? There's like lots of little issues around it.
Sure.
But the most encouraging thing is, you know, when I sat down to talk with you 6 months ago, I didn't know why I was doing this. Like I said, I wasn't doing it to meet a girl. I wasn't doing it so I could go on Tatsu and Magic Mountain. I wasn't doing it so that I could get a cool new pair of jeans. It was just fuck it. Like I just said, I'm going to go do this and I want to try something different. And now when I go and meet with that doctor, I don't know what the number is, but I know I'm 150 pounds closer than I was 6 months ago.
Right.
And so like, I'm stoked, man. Like I'm not going to like, you know, open up the astrology app and start giving that all the credit, but whatever drove me to do this, like sometimes you don't know why you do these things or what the purpose is. Sometimes you put a little carrot out in front of you and that gets you there. But like that, I started doing this other thing to prepare me for this news and this possibility in a new life. I'm so encouraged and I'm so excited that like I could have this new different life, and you know, whatever the complications are that arise, they're gonna happen. I'm just gonna deal with it because I'm not waiting around anymore. Like I want my life back, but it's not even that I want my life back. I want the life that I always wish I had, and that's more important to me than, you know, than a pizza. That's more important to me than some chili cheese fries or whatever.
Yeah. No, I think that's beautiful. And I utterly understand you, you know, it is really, I don't like to run anywhere, but like the fact that I can, you know, if I'm late for a plane and my wife like loves to be the last person on a plane and doesn't mind the anxiety right. of like almost missing it, I know I can do that. And I know that there was a time where I couldn't do that. And that is a huge win for me. You know, like I'm like, I can celebrate that and I can get onto the plane huffing and puffing and go like, that's not going to ruin my day. Whereas just having to rush in an airport used to ruin my day.
Well, I mean that you can, right? You know, that's so the other thing is like, I haven't done a ton of research, but you can't do a ton of high impact. Like, I don't know how much I can run, but once you have a hip replacement, you can't run a lot, but you can run a little bit. And, you know, I was talking with a friend about this and I'm like, you know, I'm never going to be able to run a marathon. He's like, who the fuck are you kidding, dude? Right. You've never run a marathon in your life. You never want to. I don't want to. Nobody wants to. Like, only assholes want to run marathons. So like, you need to.
Listen, I could not run a marathon. There's no way.
I couldn't. Yeah. Like the Miami airport is the closest to a marathon I ever want to be. That's a big ass airport, but it's one of those things where, yeah, like you can rush to get on the plane if you need to. And more importantly, once you get there, like, yeah, you just, you know, that anxiety you just talked about when you're big, you know, people don't understand. You have to be the first, like you don't want to be sitting in that chair very long. You don't want to watch 200 people, you know, walk past you going back to steerage, but you have to be in that chair because you have a lot going on in your head and taking, you know, exchanging some of these worries for some of these new worries is what it is. Because, you know, one of the things that we talked about last time was, you know, you have this one problem. I have this one problem and losing weight isn't going to fix my problems. It's not going to make me a millionaire. It's not going to, you know, find me a supermodel wife. It's not going to change everything, but it might make my knees, you know, hurt a little less. Well, it turns out it wasn't my knees. It was my hip. But once I get my hip taken care of, it's not going to make me a millionaire. It's not going to give me a supermodel wife. It's not going to change my life overnight, but it's one less thing to think about. And if it means getting on that plane and being okay, being the last person, because I have the same friends, like everybody I know is, you know, the last person on the plane because they don't mind it, because it's not going through their head, because they don't have that anxiety that you and I have about food, about fitting into spaces, you know, that we've had our entire lives. But if I can imagine a world or a life where I can walk onto a plane and not have that dread, or like a week of dread leading up to it, like wondering who's going to be sitting next to me and like all that stuff. I mean, talk about a gift.
Yeah. No, it's huge, man. It's really huge. And just going on walks. I remember Mike talking about, listen, I've been going on these walks with people, and it's amazing. Just walking around is amazing. And I feel that I have a freedom, because I used to be so like going on a walk used to be like somebody saying, you know, do you want to go do your taxes or something? Like it was like such a thing that was the worst. It was like, it made me nauseous, the idea of going on a walk. And now I love it. And I'm going on walks with strangers, just like, hey, you guys want to meet up and go on a walk? And it's so awesome. And I remember Mike wanting us to go on a walk, and you're like, I can't do it. My legs are not good. You could do it now if you do this.
Yeah. And you know, it's more than taxes. It's just like, it's off the table, and it's been off the table for a long time. So long that I kind of like forget about it, but just having it be a thing where if someone says, let's go, you know, let's go shopping at the Grove, like let's go see a movie, and you don't have to spend all day worrying or spend all day thinking about it, because it's one of those things where like, you can't also explain to people, because one, they can't understand, and they're going to say, oh, don't worry. No, we love you the way you are. No, we don't mind. That doesn't help. You know, that doesn't help. I know that doesn't help, because that just compounds the shame, the anxiety and all that stuff. But you can't expect anyone else to understand that burden. And then you start making excuses, and now like you're pushing people away. And like so much of this is like pushing people away to protect yourself from these things about your life, and trying to address it is welcoming them back in. And then, you know, having to explain like, hey, I wasn't being a dick. I wasn't like, I didn't cancel on you because I'm a jerk. I canceled on you because like emotionally and physically, I was incapable of going to, you know, shop for Christmas gifts with you that day, or go see a movie with you, or just go up to Runyon or whatever. And it's difficult for us, and it's difficult for other people to understand. And so you have to kind of like ask for people to be patient with you and people to be understanding. But when you have like a solution in mind, or if you have a goal in mind, it's great. And, you know, like one of the funny things, so when I saw the doctor, you know, he's telling me this, and he's like, yeah, man, like you have this your whole life ahead of you. And I was like, oh, I don't know, man. You know, I'll think about it. He's like, and he looked at me, he's like, think about what? I'm like, well, you know, I'll think about it. He's like, there's nothing to think about. Like, you have to do this. Like, you could have done it yesterday, you can do it today, or you can do it in 10 years, but it's never getting better. There is no solution other than this.
And really, it's only getting worse.
And that's the problem. It's like, well, it's rippling into like, I'm putting so much extra stress on my right. It's like right now, my left is gone, but if I push this off longer, I mean, everything gets worse. The system just starts to shut down because the rest of my body's compensating, my back, my right side, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he looked at me and kind of like had this confused look. He's like, but I've got this one, like, what I don't understand is you must be in excruciating pain. I'm like, yeah. He's like, but it's chronic, persistent pain. I'm like, uh-huh. He's like, but how do you deal with it? I'm like, yeah, exactly. And he's like, you know, he's like, I have people come in here after a day of this pain, after a week of this pain, and it's unbearable. And I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, but you've been this way for 10 years. I'm like, what do you want me to tell you, doc? Like, I'm really fucking stubborn. You know, like I've lived with this pain, and I've rather than address this thing, I've lived with this insane amount of stress and of suffering for so long that you forget that that's not reality, that because it becomes your new reality, like that's how you are. And the idea that, you know, one of the hardest things about changing, if it's losing weight, if it's getting off drugs, if it's changing your career, if it's getting, you know, doing this thing, getting a surgery or something, is you lose track of what life is supposed to look like, because whatever your daily life is, after a certain amount of time, that's just your reality. And right now, my reality is this. And I almost can't even envision a reality where I don't have to think about standing up, or I don't have to think about that stress. And like I said, I'm optimistic, but it's also fucking terrifying.
Yeah. I remember it's, there are mornings where I'll wake up and my legs and my feet will be sore, and I'll have the thought, this was just like it used to be every day. And then I'll really, really try to be honest with myself, and it's not even close. It's, right. Yeah, it's like, not even close.
I mean, and that's such like a beautiful thing, because it's like, man, like you can say my life has got so much better that I can't even remember how much pain I used to be in the daily, you know? And like, that's an incredible thing.
No, but I used to take opiates. I think I convinced myself at one point that they were like antidepressants for me, but really my initial love for them was that they took pain away. Like,
well, yeah, pain is fucking depressing, bud. And so yeah, like they kind of are an antidepressant, but exactly. And you know, like, thank God for small miracles, like in all of this, like that I never got addicted to opiates, because, you know, that was on the table. That could have been an option considering how much pain I've been in. But yeah, like the idea that like there's going to be a period where I'm going to, you know, it's like anything else, like, oh my God, like I got this new car and this new car is amazing and it has all these cool new things. And then eventually it just becomes like the car that you're driving in traffic and it's whatever. And like the idea that one day I could forget that this is something that I struggle with every day. I mean, it's unbelievable to me right now. I can't even kind of fathom it, but like, you know, I'm excited. Yeah. And so, but again, you know, it's like with everything, it comes with great responsibility, because, you know, like I sent you that, you know, you and Mike, that picture, like I have a stack of, you know, 45 pairs of pants I've gone through in the past 6 months, which is insane. And I want to throw them away. And like last night, you know, like last night I was going through these old shirts and stuff, and I was like, oh damn, like I blew through these. Like I could wear these at one point and then I got too big to wear them, and now I'm too small to wear them. And I was like, part of me feels like, you know, in Trading Places, like with Eddie Murphy, there's that scene where they're like, hey, what should we do with his clothes? Well, have him clean, so when he's back on the street, he'll have something to wear. Like part of me, like, you know, almost wants to keep this around, because I always feel like one day I'm going to be back on the streets and I'm still going to need this fucking fat pair of pants. But then I look at this stuff and I look at this clothes, like, you know, I just put on a shirt last night that I wore in 2007. And I was like excited about the fact that I fit into it. And I'm like, oh, I need to keep this. And I was like, I never wanted to wear this. You know, do you remember that era? You know, it's the Mike era. It's like they're like going out with Leo to fucking Ledoux and to Teddy's era of LA. And I'm like, I've hated the douchebags who wore these shirts. I never wore it then. I'm never wearing it in the future. And like, does this thing fit in my future? It absolutely does not, because it barely fit in my past. And so like, you know, trying to be more bold about that, because as people, like, we're so familiar with weighing the risk of change, and like we get all caught up in our head about like, oh, I don't want to take this risk, I don't want to make this change because this might happen. But like, it's very easy to overlook the risk of not doing anything. And yeah, you know, we think that not doing anything is safe, but like not doing anything is just in the, you know, it's in a car that's just like slowly rolling down a hill.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of vulnerability in that too, because we know that we have the power to throw this all away. And, right, and then we've, you know, and it's almost embarrassing to ourselves. And if anybody else noticed, you know, and that we have to go out and reaccumulate all the stuff we got rid of, it's all a risk. But I think that, like, you know, this is what I'm envious of people like Elon Musk. And not that I think he's the greatest guy, but I do respect his ability to like just keep going. Do you know what I mean? Despite, sure, what the media or the government or whoever thinks, he just keeps going. He's just keeps doing his thing. And there's something like man, nothing can touch that guy. Whereas I'm myself, in my way, more than anyone else. You know what I mean? I don't have the government after me or major news organizations. Yeah,
and guys like you and me, we don't need any help like getting in our way.
Right.
You
know? I'm just there all the time, stopping myself. Exactly. I have an idea.
I don't need any help fucking up my life. I am more than able. As a matter of fact, I am an expert at fucking up my life. But, you know, like, I also think that, you know, for people like you and me, that's what gives us the willpower to overcome it. Because if I like the power of knowing that I could fuck it all up, but that also, if you take that and flip that coin, it's like, well, I have the power to manage it all too. Like, I get to decide. Because, you know, like, again, I know it's a really dark analogy, but it's like, I've got a gun on the table and I can pick it up anytime I want, you know, like, and if I want to throw my life away, you can wake up every day of your life and decide that today is the day you're going to throw your life away, or that today's your day you're going to stop caring or give up. But keeping that option is strangely kind of like helpful, because it keeps, you know, someone like me or someone like you kind of going, knowing that we're in control.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. I mean, and that's maybe the only thing we're in control of, right? At the end of the day.
Right, yeah. And knowing that we're in control of destruction lets us be in control of positivity and of being of service and of being in a community. And like, knowing that you could destroy it all lets you go on walks and lets you be like this gigantic force for other people who need help in the world. And you know, it takes a little bit of a big personality, which is scary for a lot of people. But, you know, if you can take all that energy and focus it into something healthy and helpful, if you can take all that energy and know that your family is the reason that you're going to get up and you're going to eat the way that you want to eat, or you have a group of people who are going to come for a walk, and you know that no matter what you do on Saturday night, Sunday morning, you have to be up to be there for your people, you know, it's important to have those commitments. And if we lose track of them, then, you know, we lose track of ourselves a little bit. And, you know, in all of this, you know, with all this new information that I've been getting and this new life that I've been kind of like steering into, you know, like a couple months ago, I was sitting with a friend and she's been through a lot of life and she's an amazing friend and very smart. And I was explaining to him, like, damn, you know, like I'm kind of bummed. Before I knew about the hip, like, I still knew my leg was fucked up, and I was in the middle of seeing like the biomechanic and the physical therapist and everything. And I was like, you know, like, if I address this, I'm just so sad that the best years of my life are behind me. Like, I squandered, you know, these really important years of my life. And she looked at me and she said, well, then they weren't the best years of your life. Right. And I was like, damn, like, that's so simple, but it fucking hit me like a baseball bat. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, yeah. And, you know, she's older than me. She's, you know, whatever. And she was like, yeah, you know, you have so much life ahead of you. And so if those years weren't great to you, they weren't the best, and you still have an amazing life ahead of you. And like, I talked to her last night, actually, and I mentioned this to her, and she was so excited. And she was like, I am so excited to see where you go in this world because of the decisions you're making to take your life into your own hands right now. And again, that's powerful. And, you know, that's so motivating.
I really do think that that's a great point, because I think that we can live without intention and purpose. And it's very easy to exist in the world and just move through it, right? We're moving through it no matter what. So I wake up, I do what I did yesterday. I'm just repeating these same steps. But to have a change, right, to work towards the best years of your life, that takes intention, that takes a decision, that takes responsibility. And there's no judgment on people who aren't doing that. That's, you know, I think there's...
Everyone wakes up every day and they're doing their best. Like, I don't care who it is or what they did today. Whatever you did today is your best, because no one would choose to do anything less than that. So yeah, like, we've all been there. I've been there.
Yeah. And to actually step onto a different path, that's just a choice that you make in that moment, you know? And I do think that making a choice that you see that benefits you does, after many steps get easier. I really do. You know?
And yeah, like, and again, it's always there. You know, there's always another path to go on. And I find a lot of strength and a lot of like hope in knowing that there are different paths to try out, and that like, this is the life that we get to lead. Like, we are blessed that we get to experience all of this. And like, you know, you and I have had these experiences as most people will never understand, for good and for bad. But like, I am so happy that I get to taste the entire variety of life, you know, and that's so incredible to me. Because like, you know, in the middle of this, like when I started to make changes and some people close to me started to notice, this one friend pulled me aside and she was like, I just don't understand. Like, she was like, did you give up? Like, what happened? What went on? Cause she didn't really know me before when I was smaller, and she met me when I was at my probably worst. And, you know, that hurt. Like, hearing, did you give up? That's right in the breadbasket. That hurts. And I was like, no, I didn't give up, but I did lose myself. I think I lost myself for a little bit, and I lost track of what's important to me, and I lost track of the things. And like I said earlier, like, my body is the least interesting thing about me. I've got so many fucking fun and interesting things I want to do in this world, and so many great things I get to do. But I like going out to dance. I like being in situations. I like being great at my job. I like creating art. I want to see the world. And like, when I took those things off the table, when I took those things out of the rotation as options, I lost myself a little bit. And so like, when I'm looking for motivation now, I just realize like, I'm finding myself again, and I'm finding those things that drove me to try to be better today, whatever that means.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, that's amazing. Steven, thank you so much. This is beautiful. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to hear. We got to do another check-in in a few months to see how we're progressing. Thank you.
Well, and yeah, like, and I've also joked, like, we have to at some point do our little Gluttony After Dark podcast, like, where we talk about other stuff, because at some point we're going to both have this fixed, and then we got plenty to talk about.
We got lots to talk about. We'll talk about Hollywood in the 90s and today.
We'll talk about these kids today. We got a thing or two to teach them.
That's right.
Thanks, love you, brother.
You too.
Have a good one.
And now for the Q&A.
Today's question comes from Cameron.
Hi, Cameron.
Cameron says, you spoke one time about how you had to accept that fitness doesn't end when you reach a weight goal, and this is forever. I now need your help with my 10-year-old son who struggles with overeating like I once did. He claims to always be hungry, and I don't want to give him body dysmorphia or make him have a bad relationship with food like I have. Do you have any tips on how to help him?
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter how hard we try, we screw our kids up. And if our attention is on something, it's going to put their attention on it, unfortunately. And maybe he is hungry all the time. I think for a kid, the ideal would be have foods in the house, which it doesn't matter if they overeat them. Chicken breast, broccoli, carrot sticks, celery. Would it really matter if he overate any of those things? Apples, blueberries. I think, like, you can definitely overeat those things, but it would be really difficult. And I say that to you, like, I've had 10-year-old kids. I could never have pulled off a household where I only had that, where I didn't have, you know, frozen chicken nuggets and Jenny's mac and cheese and cereal and all the other shit kids like to eat. But like your 10-year-old kid can't drive to the store and go grocery shopping. You can. So if you have an abundance of foods that it's going to be difficult or not damaging to overeat, then I think that that's the solution for that. I think in a day and age when you have, when you're loading the house up with foods that are calorically dense and highly palatable, to ask somebody at 10 years old to exercise personal responsibility and limit their consumption of these things, it's just like an impossible thing to do. You know, today there's tons of food in my house that I just don't really eat at all. And if I do, I have a single bite of it. And like, that's not super difficult for me. But like in the very beginning, when I was starting, I like said to my wife, like, hey, this food is fucking me up. Please keep it out of the house. And she did for a pretty decent period of time until I wasn't like, I knew that I wasn't going to fall into temptation if it was there. I don't know that you can have that conversation with your kid. It's just up to you to have a house full of food that it's like, he wants to overeat. Great. There's cucumbers and carrots and chicken and beef and eggs and, you know, turkey and all kinds of fruits and vegetables and stuff like that, where it's like, knock yourself out, bud. You want to make a fruit salad, make a fruit salad. You want to make a regular salad, make a regular salad. You want to make a, you know, chicken lettuce cups, go for it. Very difficult to overeat that stuff. And likely he'll be able to eat until he's full. And I would also say there's probably going to be some turbulence in your home because he's going to be like, wait, where's all the shit I like to overeat? Where's my Doritos and my Pringles and my Fruity Pebbles and, you know, my Hot Pockets and my, what are those things? Those delicious treats. I get the Legendary Foods version of
Pop-Tarts.
Them. Pop-Tarts. Where's my Pop-Tarts? So that's my recommendation. Get a bunch of, like, you know, non-fat Greek yogurt and invite him to put blueberries in it. And, you know, you're just not going to have a conversation with him, I don't think, where you go like, look, you're entering onto a path where your involvement with these foods is going to be damaging down the line. Cause it's not damaging to him today, I would assume, right, unless he's got like type 2 diabetes or there's other major problems. But if you're just sitting there going like, I'm watching him overeat, I'm noticing he's gaining weight. Yeah. Okay. You're the one providing these foodstuffs. Now, he's going to go to school. There's going to be other kids with other foods. He can trade with them. They can be kind to him and give him cookies. And I don't know what kids bring in their lunches. Or if he goes to a school where there's like a Taco Bell at the cafeteria, that I've seen that, which I think is so crazy. You're likely not going to be able to control for that. But if everything at your house is completely safe for him to eat as much as he wants, where's the problem? There's no problem. And then you're going to fall into like 80-20 where he spends some amount of time out of his house. But if he's eating breakfast and dinner at your house at home, and the only real meal he's eating out is at, you know, garbage cafeteria food. Okay. It's not the end of the world. It's a big change. And it's a change for everybody in your house. You know, I would be willing to bet that you and your husband or your partner and other kids, I don't know what her whole family dynamic is, but like, it's going to be probably just as hard on the rest of the family. So that's my recommendation. Hard to get a 10-year-old to understand and exercise personal responsibility. That conversation, I think, goes nowhere. You know, talking about the benefits or the properties of different foods, like what fat does in the body, what protein does in the body, what carbohydrates do in the body. They all have their uses. They all have their functions and purposes. They're all necessary. There's nothing wrong with that. Talking about like even calories, like there's nothing wrong with that. Like having a conversation where you're giving your kid data, but expecting them, you know, it's like the marshmallow test. Are you familiar with the marshmallow test page? So they did this test, and who knows if it's like scientifically accurate, but like they put a marshmallow in front of a little kid in a room. The kid's in this room all by themselves with one guy. And the guy says, listen, you can eat this marshmallow now, or you can wait and have two. And then the guy leaves the room and leaves him in the room with the marshmallow. The majority of kids just fucking eat the marshmallow. They're like, the fucking marshmallow sitting right there. I want to eat the marshmallow, right? And very rarely there'd be a kid who's like, well, forget it. I want two marshmallows. I'll wait. And then they make them really wait, you know, 10, 15 minutes sitting in a room alone with an empty table except for a marshmallow. And they had this whole theory, like the kids that could wait and postpone gratification and receive two marshmallows went on to be hyper successful. And it's like, yeah, okay. So Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos would sit there and not eat the marshmallows. My kids would have eaten the marshmallows. I would have eaten the marshmallows. The vast majority of the human race eats the marshmallow, does not wait for two marshmallows. So you have a kid with a propensity to overeat in a house full of stuff where, like, yeah, you can damage yourself overeating that. You can damage yourself overeating anything, but it's way harder to overeat fruits and vegetables and whole grains and beans and lean proteins. It's just way harder. So give him that stuff to overeat and let him go to town. See how he does.
Excellent advice. Love that. I so understand this person's question. And you're right. It's not easy, but so, I mean, you're right. Who wants to, first of all, who wants to overeat celery, but also you can, and it's something to do and chew on. It's crunchy.
I don't know if you can overeat celery. I think that like the act of chewing celery actually uses more energy than the celery provides. So like celery is the one thing where you literally cannot overeat it. You're going to eat to the point where you're at capacity and you just can't get any more in. And even what you've eaten, it's like mostly fiber. So like, it's just going to pass through. You're going to have a big, healthy bowel movement.
Great. We need that.
Yeah. Where, you know, if you make ants on a log or you've got celery and ranch, there could be some issues there. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you got to get real specific. Peanut butter, you can overeat peanut butter. Ranch dressing, you can overeat that. Not hard. Raisins are incredibly calorically dense. Like, I'm saying, like, if you want to give him the, if your idea of success is him not gaining weight, then you got to put a, and you realize, like, if you don't lock your pantry, right, and not allow him access, and you aren't measuring out his cereal and his raisins and his peanut butter, and you want him to have some freedom, then the foods you put in your house are going to have to be of a type where it's difficult to overeat.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Thank you for that question, Cameron. If anyone else has a question out there that they would like Ethan to answer, you can always email us. It's hello@AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.